move to the second case this morning, Northeastern Rural Electric Membership Corporation versus Wabash Valley College.
If it pleases the court, my name is John Bloom. I represent Northeastern Rural Electric Membership Corporation, the appellant in this matter. The appellee is Wabash Valley Power Association. And if it pleases the court, it is not an oversimplification to suggest that this dispute can be resolved by simply answering one straightforward question. Does Northeastern have the right to request declaratory relief regarding its right to cancel its contract with Wabash in any other forum than the FERC? The answer is yes. The district court inappropriately determined that a federal question did exist and that remand should have been granted for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, which is what my client asked the court to do. A grant of injunctive relief by the district court was not appropriate because the court's rationale for concluding that Wabash was likely to prevail on the merits of the dispute was erroneous. Northeastern simply did not violate the filed rate doctrine. And secondly, as a second avenue for the substance of the opinion, the court said that Northeastern was somehow guilty of acquiescence, waiver, or ratification. And those are not applicable defenses to the facts of the case. Why the state court filing was not a collateral attack on the filed rate was because this dispute has nothing to do with the congressional purpose of the FBA. No issue raised by Northeastern relates to the determination of a just and reasonable rate or the terms and conditions of service provided under that rate. Another way to look at this case, another way to state the issue, is it is not how but who determines the rate, which is at the center of this dispute. Now, that goes back to Section 4 of the contract, which clearly provided with its introductory clause that the rates determine the determination of rate through this lengthy contract would simply be under the jurisdiction and control of the Indiana state regulators. The case law on, and that's what that clause means. The case law cited by both parties deal with the contract disputes unrelated to determination of just and reasonable rates and or the terms and conditions of service. And therefore, they're not questions reserved for the exclusive jurisdiction of FERC. The best example, as we briefed, is probably Portland General Electric Company, because that was FERC itself speaking when there was a dispute where one side wanted to apply the Oregon law and bring a state court action, and the other side sought removal to FERC, and FERC looked at the issues. And those facts are analogous to our case. The contract provision at issue in the Portland case was unrelated to rates in any way. The contract provision that was being sued on was the fact that PGE, the defendant, failed to appoint an official to liquidate the assets of a plant called the Trojan plant when it was in financial distress. And there was a clause in the contract that said that that was a breach of the contract. So the issue became whether that somehow impacted the federal rate. And the case quotes this: the reasonableness of PGA's rates, terms, and conditions or the prudence of PGA's decision to close Trojan are simply not at issue in this case. What is at issue is it happened. They violated the contract. Further, and it's the crux of the case and an important policy statement that FERC was making, when FERC said, moreover, if we adopted PGE's position, we would close off from state review a wide range of conventional contract interpretation issues whenever a contract is on file with the commission, even if the matter at issue had little relation to the commission's exclusive jurisdiction to determine the reasonableness of rates. Now, in the Wabash Northeastern case, it was the promise made and the bargain in fact that these members that were forming this other cooperative, Wabash, to supply power with them, expected to have the rates determined under local jurisdiction. That was the agreement that was signed. Years later, Wabash found that its business plan, in its best interest, would be to prepay a government loan, which would take it out of an exemption from being determined subject to federal jurisdiction as a public utility. At that point, Northeastern notified Wabash that to do so would be a violation of its contract rights. But Wabash went ahead and solicited its board of directors to pass a resolution to pay off the loan, and ipso facto became subject to federal jurisdiction. Now, basically, that is what this case is about.
Mr. Bloom, can I ask you, let's go back to the Portland General Electric case. Yes, indicates that at a minimum, the party in that case, if it wanted to terminate the contract, would have to file notice of that termination with FERC, correct?
Correct.
Does FERC have the right to disapprove such notices under, I think it's Section 3515 of the regulations?
I believe they have the right to disapprove if it is the seller provider, which is the jurisdictional entity, giving an insufficient reason for cutting off the power to the supplied party. My understanding is, though, that it is in almost all instances a ministerial act of just notifying the commission so that when parties come to an end of a contract, so they won't be worried about the record keeping of the file rate anymore.
Can you direct us to FERC decisions either specifically approving or rejecting state court decisions terminating contracts?
When you say approving or rejecting state court decisions.
Let's suppose we agree with you, order a remand, you go forward in state courts, overcome these various defenses like waiver and acquiescence and ratification and so on, and you ultimately get the Indiana state courts to say, yes, Northeastern is free to go and depart from the Wabash Valley Power Association family. At that point, a notice would have to be filed with FERC, right?
I believe to terminate the contract, yes.
Okay. So that notice is filed with FERC. Can anybody object? For example, could other members of Wabash Valley object and say, look, this, you're going to strand us with infrastructure. This is unjust. It's contrary to good public policy. FERC, you should step in.
Okay.
They could be heard on those issues, right?
The question I believe that you pose, and if I understood it correctly, would be who would have the right? What's the constellation?
Would anybody have the right?
I believe that only those people with standing would have a right, and they would be privy to the decision, the state court decision that found a breach of contract.
Okay. We may be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, because I'm not asking you to speculate all the way down this line. Okay. But I am speculating, and I'm asking, what do we see in FERC decisions that would give us some clues about how it would be likely to deal with such a problem?
As I understand,
that's decisions either rejecting state court termination decisions or approving them.
Well, first of all, FERC doesn't have a policy of trying to intervene when it only has not exclusive but concurrent jurisdiction.
That's not my question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I know this is difficult stuff, but you and your opposing counsel know it better than we do. If FERC, you're saying if you win in the state courts, you file notice of that termination with FERC. And I'm asking you, does FERC case law give us any kind of guidance as to what sorts of power and review jurisdiction FERC could exercise over that decision?
And I apologize, I have nothing to say in response to that because I don't know.
Okay. If you were to proceed in the state courts, could you settle that case with an agreed termination if the parties agreed to that, or would you have to go get FERC approval for that as well?
Well, I believe that FERC approval under the section of the regulations that I believe the court cited properly is required to close the file, but it's ministerial. If both parties to the dispute report a settlement and a termination of the contract, it's that easy.
Okay. What if the settlement were to give Northeastern a more favorable rate than other Wabash Valley members pay?
It can't.
Because
that's
the
whole
Valley
purpose
and
the difference between, because the filed rate doctrine prohibits Northeastern from ever collecting damages.
No. Prospectively. A new rate prospectively.
Okay, by agreement of the parties.
Yes.
Then that rate would have to be filed as a new rate with FERC and would have to stand the test of reasonableness. Now, the question would be who would have an interest in diving into that and intervening? And I think you probably proposed the question that another member of Wabash could do so unless they were really privy to the dispute as a member of Wabash.
Thank you.
There are other cases. There's a Seventh Circuit case, Bastion versus AT&T Wireless, which our opponents cited, is distinguishable because in that case, the gentleman had purchased cell service here in Chicago when the network was just being built out. And his complaint and the gravamen was, they're not performing like they told me they'd perform. But it was very simple that the rate was subject to the FCC, and the FCC had granted permission as a term and condition of that rate to the wireless company to build out its network, which means that they were going to be dropped calls, but it was in the purview of the decision of just and reasonableness that had already been made by the federal entity. So it just wasn't a state case. The district court, in granting the injunctive relief, actually said that Northeastern was attacking the tariff. But to do so, the court had to rewrite Northeastern's complaint to include a prayer for rate relief when none existed. The quotation from the opinion is that we wanted to lever a better rate. That is not true. Northeastern simply wanted a declaration to protect itself that had a right to cancel the contract so that it could buy power elsewhere in the market. It's all we ever asked for. To read anything else into that complaint is erroneous.
That's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's a pretty big deal for you all to break away from Wabash Valley at this point, though.
Yes, it is, sir. But it is not in any way inappropriate or unbusinesslike for a company, a cooperative the size of Northeastern, to solicit bids for power in the market and take care of its own power future. There's certainly nothing inappropriate about that. As soon as it's out of the contract that it had with Wabash, which we earnestly contend Wabash breached by the action of moving to FERC over our objection. So what we have is a well-pleaded complaint, not an artfully pleaded complaint. And the proof of that fact is in your case, the Kahneman case, when Judge Posner stated that the claim against Sprint in that case, which is based in fraud on its surface, but really wanted damages and a new rate, was outside of state court jurisdiction, and there was a federal question. And then he posed the issue, hypothetically, but if there had been another independent covenant in that case, which was only subject to state court law, and he called it the ugly fruit example, then in that fact, there would be state court jurisdiction. And clearly that's what we have in this case. Section 4 is independent of how a rate is to determine. It says that the agreement of the parties and the bargain of fact was who would determine the rate. And neither party had the right to just unilaterally decide that they were going to change the contract in that respect. And that is a clear and simple question of the interpretation of it and construction of an agreement made in 1977 by the parties.
Mr. Bloom, if we disagree with you and affirm what the district court has done, when would Northeastern be free to terminate? When does the contract expire?
Northeastern has now, since this case has progressed, has actually exercised its option, which it had not done before. The option had no legal import in this case until June 30, 2012. Northeastern exercised, would plan to make the escrow payments and depart on June 30, 2015.
You had to pay for that, right?
Yes, that's an absolutely extra payment being made pursuant to a policy that gave, adopted by Wabash, giving all Wabash members an option, basically, to take a look at the market if they're willing to pay extra to terminate early and make that decision. The interesting thing about that sixth supplement and how it isn't relevant to this case is that the Wabash somehow claims that they changed their position in reliance on the execution of it. But they couldn't have done so because it was a free look. We put money in an escrow account up to June 30th, 2012 for one reason. Whenever we wanted to say, you know, we looked at the market and this is the best deal, we're staying, we got the money back and the agreement was off. It's only after that date the agreement gets cast in cement and we have an interest to be protected. In other words, the interest to be protected from Wabash is you better perform after you exercise because now we're not looking to your power needs in the future anymore. We're expecting you to leave. And oh, by the way, you owe us a bunch of money, so we want the right to specifically perform an injunctive relief starting at the exercise of the option date. Well, the district court's decision was based on the fact that injunctive relief was appropriate because only Wabash could prevail on the merits. And the underpinning was you've raised a federal question, and only FERC has the right to decide it. I'm here as the enforcer. That was the district court's opinion. There's a federal question. You're trying to do a collateral attack on a FERC-filed rate, and my duty is to stop you from doing that. And therefore, if you've sued, you have virtually no way to collect if I believe that you should have gone to FERC and litigated the matter at FERC. Well, as the court knows, the parties were at FERC, and we got the most wonderful non-decision from FERC that we could have gotten, and it was the green light to take our case to state court because FERC only said two things. One, we recognize that since 2004, we have been the applicable determiner of the rates because the parties brought us a situation where statutorily we had to. And number two, therefore, we have jurisdiction now over this contract. And Northeastern has never raised the issue that as long as this contract is in effect, we pay under the filed rate and there are no damages, there's no give back. But the other thing that FERC said very judiciously was, with this record before us, we're not going to breach a contract claim because the parties didn't ask us to do it. So FERC said nothing, and in filing state court action, Northeastern wasn't doing an end run, as it's been characterized, on FERC at all. We were simply taking the next logical step. I reserve time for rebuttal, so thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the Court. James Malisak for the defendant appellee, Wabash Valley Power Association. After receiving substantial evidence and having a hearing, considering the parties' briefs and all the authorities, District Judge Barker concluded that this case was all about rates. And it is all about rates. The only reason we're here is that Northeastern is trying to renege on its all requirements wholesale power supply contract so that now that the market rates are lower, it can try to get a lower rate than is required by this all requirements contract. The sequence of events here, I think, is critical to the understanding of what the issues are. In 2004, with Wabash Valley Board repaying the federal loan from the RUS, the jurisdiction over rates went automatically from the Indiana Commission to FERC. At that time, this is back in 2004, Northeastern did not assert its breach of contract. It filed no lawsuit, and in fact, when another member in 2004, Midwest Energy, did challenge the change in regulation in its case from the Michigan Commission to FERC, Northeastern didn't join in, didn't support that position, stayed silent. FERC fully considered that argument, the same argument that Northeastern has pursued now 6.5 years later, that that change in jurisdiction was a breach, and FERC ruled against Midwest. Northeastern took no steps to appeal, and neither did Midwest. The issue was settled. That was an interpretation of the wholesale power supply contracts that had become part of the FERC-filed rate. All the wholesale power contracts, 26 of them, of the Wabash Valley members have the same essential language, and FERC's ruling became part of the filed rate and applicable to Northeastern as well. And Northeastern didn't raise the issue, despite numerous opportunities to do so.
How did the FERC decision become part of the filed rate? I don't understand.
Yes, Your Honor. The wholesale power supply contracts were filed as part of the filed rate. The filed rate includes the formula rate, the wholesale power supply contracts for each member. And when FERC construed the terms of the wholesale power supply contract, that then became the understanding of what the filed rent rate meant. And since they were uniform, it had to apply to all. So that became the understanding that FERC had of the filed rate, what it meant. And no one further objected for 6.5 years until we received, Wabash Valley received a demand letter, December 27, 2010, saying we believe you're in breach 6.5 years later after the change in jurisdiction. And we believe you're in breach because we're paying much higher rates at FERC than we would have if we were still regulated by the Indiana Commission. They actually had a consultant do some sort of workup that supposedly showed that it was a $3.1 million in aggregate rates higher under FERC than under the Indiana Commission. What did we do? We immediately took the dispute to FERC, and we said, you've already ruled on this in the Midwest proceeding, but you need to tell Northeastern that it cannot terminate the filed rate, the wholesale power contract on its own. It cannot try to get out of its obligation to pay the filed rate. If it wants to do so, it has to come here to FERC and assert the grounds for doing so, and give everybody that has an interest in the matter, which would certainly include all the Wabash Valley members, to be heard. Because the very point, as this Court has said, and Kahneman and others, the very point of the filed rate doctrine is to make sure that there isn't wrongful, unlawful discrimination among people who are subject to the filed rate. And that's exactly what Northeastern was trying to do.
But didn't FERC tell you that issue is really beyond the scope of this proceeding?
The actual breach of contract issue, yes, but not the significance of the breach of contract issue, Your Honor, for FERC jurisdiction. And this is a very important aspect of the FERC decision in November of 2011. Because after we filed our petition saying, tell Northeastern this dispute is a federal matter, it's a FERC matter, it's a filed rate matter, so that they don't go and do something unlawful, Northeastern filed what's called a motion for summary disposition of our petition, in which they said, FERC, there's no need for you to get involved in this. This is solely a breach of contract matter under state law, and under your case law here, if it doesn't implicate FERC jurisdiction or rates, you can just let the state courts do it. Well, we, of course, opposed it and said, well, but look, this does challenge FERC jurisdiction. They're disputing your earlier ruling that you are the applicable regulatory authority under the contract as a matter of contract interpretation, and they want to get out of the wholesale power supply contract to get lower rates. And what FERC said was, we deny Northeastern's motion for summary disposition. In other words, we reject the idea that this is only a state law matter outside of our jurisdiction. And they said, instead, we're going to say again, and they referred back to the Midwest holding, we're going to tell you again, we are the applicable regulatory authority under the wholesale power supply contract and the filed rate. We have exclusive jurisdiction over the wholesale power supply contract, and any change to that wholesale power supply contract has to be authorized by us. What did Northeastern do? It could have appealed. Could have been here on appeal from that order. And if it disputed FERC's grounds for decision, it should have done that. It didn't. 5 weeks later, it instead files a state court action asking, based upon allegations that the FERC rates are too high, asking a state court to declare that the wholesale power contract is unenforceable because of breach, and that all the supplements to the wholesale power supply contract, all on file with FERC, are null and void. That's a direct attack on a filed rate, but done through collateral forum in the state court. We removed the action to the federal district court, because this is really the Kahneman case and the Bastian case that this court has decided. It was
Is it your contention, counsel, that any contract dispute is subject to exclusive FERC jurisdiction if the contract is a tariff filed with FERC?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor.
Okay, how do we tell the difference between where there's exclusive jurisdiction and not?
Well, I think this case typifies where there's not state court jurisdiction, because the issue related directly to FERC jurisdiction. The provision of the contract at issue relates to regulatory jurisdiction. The provision, Section 4, is actually called rate, and it involves matters such as the basis for the rates that Wabash Valley is to propose. It has to be cost of service. So it relates directly to disputes over FERC jurisdiction and rates.
Well, let's suppose we've got a contract entered into for wholesale electricity in which the contract provides for exclusive state regulatory jurisdiction. And it says it's a material breach to transfer jurisdiction to FERC or to file this with FERC. And then one of the parties transfers jurisdiction to FERC. Would FERC have exclusive jurisdiction to decide that breach issue?
Not initially, Your Honor, and that's what should have happened here. If Northeastern had a bona fide breach of contract claim based upon the transfer of jurisdiction, it should have filed suit in state court before FERC took jurisdiction.
It didn't. So you think they could have done that then?
They could have sought a declaratory judgment yes, Your Honor, that have a state court construe the contract and determine what the party's obligations are. They didn't do that.
Well,
it went to FERC.
This sounds like, though, you're like, I mean, I understand your arguments about waiver and acquiescence and ratification and so on with all those supplements, but I'm not sure I understand. That seems more like a bunch of merits defenses to the breach of contract than jurisdictional issues. And that's why I'm asking about this hypothetical.
Well, I think it's what really FERC itself decided. This is if you are seeking to change the contract, terminate, it's really termination of the contract. That is by statute within FERC's exclusive jurisdiction. That's section
How is it
two.
Exclusive?
Because by statute. It's if you are, if it's a FERC jurisdictional contract, only FERC can authorize its termination. But Federal Power
does
Act.
Does the Power Act have a savings clause?
This one does not, Your Honor. Some of the cases in the telecommunications area, I know, have discussed that.
Right.
No, the
Power Act does not have a savings
It does not.
Clause.
If it's exclusive, I don't understand Portland General Electric then.
Well, what FERC was saying there was because on its face, the dispute does not involve our jurisdictional. It does not involve rates. It involves some sort of performance issue, for instance, some sort of default issue. Standard contract law issues that are usually handled under state law. FERC said, we'll let you go ahead and have those decided in state
court.
So
it's not exclusive.
But as soon as it becomes a matter of termination, and this is what it made clear in Portland General,
what did you say?
It made clear in Portland General as to if the issue becomes termination, if the state court, for instance, went ahead and said, well, we see grounds allowing the purchaser here to terminate the contract can't be ordered to be terminated by the state court. It doesn't have authority to do
that. You need FERC approval.
You have to go back to FERC. And at FERC, that's when, as Your Honor indicated in your questions to Northeastern's counsel, that's when anybody with an interest, including Wabash Valley's other members, can come in and say, this is... You can't allow a termination here because that would be a discriminatory rate. You would be imposing stranded costs because of Northeastern's termination on us. It's not just and reasonable. So I think there would be a very strong case that FERC would say, hey, we understand what the state law issue is, but when it comes into our control here over power issues in interstate commerce, the statute gives us exclusive jurisdiction over termination, and we find it's unjust and unreasonable to do so. Northeastern, you have to continue to the end of your contract at the filed rate. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And so it clearly was a proper removal. And
why couldn't you just seek a declaratory judgment in state court, though, and then take that to FERC?
You could do that, Your Honor. If they had done that originally at Northeastern, they maybe could have done that.
So,
before.
So if the state court declares that the contract's terminated for whatever reason, that say the shift of regulation, that then goes to FERC, and FERC could overrule the state court?
But I don't believe the state court properly has power to say that the contract is terminated. All it can say is that there are grounds that would justify the termination. We construe the contract in the following fashion under the facts given. We find that the purchaser would, under state law, have a right to terminate this contract. It then would have to go to FERC, and FERC would have to make a ruling under federal law, under the Federal Power Act, whether that termination would be appropriate or not. And, as I say, because of the non-discrimination rule, there'd be very substantial questions as to whether one member should be allowed out when all the contracts are written in the same manner and have been construed necessarily in the same manner by FERC. FERC must maintain, FERC has said that in the Portland General case. If there's a question of uniformity in our rulings, then the state court can't make a ruling. So it would have to make sure that the filed rate was equal and non-discriminatory as to all the members. Once in federal court, we counterclaimed for an injunction to stop Northeastern's violation of the filed rate and also its violation of FERC's exclusive jurisdiction. That's really the matter that's up here today.
Let me go back, yeah, if I could, to your earlier comment. Suppose after the 2011 decision by FERC, Northeastern had just gone into state court and said, we want a declaratory judgment that Wabash Valley is in material breach and has been since 2004. So, and we are justified in terminating that contract. All we want is a declaratory judgment. Would the state court have had jurisdiction to decide that and then let FERC decide termination later?
No, Your Honor, and that's because of Northeastern's long delay in bringing the matter and the fact that FERC had already ruled on this issue of jurisdiction. In other words, back in, as far as the Midwest proceeding in 2004, FERC looked at the contract. It construed the contract, and it said there is nothing in the contract that prevents us from becoming, here at FERC, the applicable regulatory authority.
Did Midwestern seek termination?
What it sought, it didn't seek termination. What it said was, FERC, you cannot exercise jurisdiction here because the Michigan Commission has the primary jurisdiction through the contract, and the Michigan Commission has not authorized this. So, in effect, it prevented the contract from going forward.
Well, that's a different issue, isn't it?
It's a little different. It's a little different, but it raises the same issue of whether FERC then decided it's a federal matter in construing the contract or it's a state matter, and what did FERC do? FERC said, we read the contract here at FERC to mean that the applicable regulatory authority is now us. It didn't say that's a contract issue that really should be decided by the state courts in Michigan or by the commission in Michigan. It just went ahead and construed the contract because I think it saw it went to its jurisdiction.
But Midwestern was trying to challenge the actual enforcement of the filed rates, correct?
It was, but it was raising the same issues.
Yeah, that's an easy question, right, in terms of jurisdiction.
But it raised the contract interpretation issue, which FERC decided. But then we go 6.5 years further to the FERC proceeding directly involving Northeastern, where it's threatening termination. And FERC says, we decided this issue in Midwest. We are the applicable regulatory authority here. So they construed the contract. There, as Judge Barker said, she didn't see that there was what's left of the breach of contract action after those FERC rulings. Certainly a state court now can't say, well, really under the validly, given FERC's interpretation of a filed rate contract under federal law, that somehow the state court now can contradict FERC or overrule it. FERC's interpretation of the contract is binding. Now, those are interesting contract issues. I think we win on them. They became moot because Northeastern never raised the breach of contract issue for 6.5 years. And, in fact, 1 year after FERC took jurisdiction, it entered into the sixth supplemental agreement that starts at Appendix 92. This is a really crucial document in this case, which really answers most of the issues raised on the appeal, because without raising the breach of contract, never mentioned the breach of contract, Northeastern said we would like to follow the board's policy of allowing us to buy out of our contract. And so it entered into an agreement with Wabash Valley for a 10-year buyout period. And in doing so, it twice in the contract said the wholesale power supply contract, as amended, is in full force and effect. And it even went beyond that and said we commit, again, to buying all our requirements, all our wholesale power, at the FERC filed rate, until at least June 30, 2015. So it's not this empty, meaningless option contract that Northeastern's counsel portrays. It was a reaffirmation of the validity of that wholesale power contract and no mention of breach. It's followed by the 7th, 8th, and 9th supplements that added some delivery points, but once again, all the way up into mid-2010, Northeastern is confirming that the whole wholesale power supply contract is in full force and effect. And then out of the blue, 6 months later, at the end of 2010, we get this letter saying, you've been in material breach for the last 6.5 years, and now we're raising it, and we want out of this contract. So the two issues that were left on appeal here from the preliminary injunction, because Northeastern has waived all the other issues of irreparable injury, public interest, and a balance of hardships. The only issues are our likelihood of success on the merits, and we believe that based upon the clear violation of the filed rate and the sixth supplemental agreement, the reaffirmation of its contractual obligations by Northeastern without raising breach, clearly we have a very, very strong likelihood of success on the merits. And we've also moved for sanctions, Your Honor, because we believe this appeal should never have been taken. We moved to dismiss early on. The motions panel allowed us to continue with the motion as part of the merits.
And is that what you prefer, a dismissal of the appeal or a ruling on the merits?
I think either remedy would be fine with us, Your Honor. Particularly if it's
followed. As long as you win, right?
as long as we win, and we really do believe we should not be saddled, and our members should not be saddled with these costs of an appeal that should never have been taken. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. I'll give you another minute. You were out of time, but.
I thought I would have a light that went off.
It went red. The 1 minute is this. This is still not a rate case.
Lights. Red is out of time.
This is not a rate case. The issue was not the same at FERC when Midwest raised it. Northeastern was not a party or bound to that decision. You were right, Judge Hamilton, when you made the distinction that what Midwest wanted was a return to their commission approving that rate. This is not about the reasonableness of rates. This is about a contract provision which is unconnected to the reasonableness of rates. We are never taking a position. We're not bound by the filed rate doctrine. We never attacked it. Council did not state correctly what FERC held. FERC held that we had not. It was not going to reach the issue of the breach of contract, because it had said what it was supposed to say. We now have jurisdiction. And that's the difference in this case. It is not a contract case. It's on all fours with Portland. There is no exclusive jurisdiction. Council said that we filed at FERC. That is exactly backwards. The record is they surprised us by filing at FERC after we had entered into negotiations with them and told them they were in breach of contract. I'm not taking any more of your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Thanks to both counsel. Case will be taken under advisement.